This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Brentford FC, come on you Brentford, come on you bees, come on you Brentford, come on, sit on your
face. This is the besotted Pride of West London podcast. And we're coming to you on a Wednesday, back in the virtual joint. Because there's been two games back-to-back for the Bees. And to be quite honest with you, sometimes it's really good when you have two games back-to-back, one on a Tuesday night after a Saturday. Because if you lose on the Saturday, you can actually kind of make amends on the Tuesday, or the team can make amends. And it's exactly what they did. Saturday, we went to Fulham. It didn't go according to plan. But we came back Tuesday night, went down to Colchester. We were up for the cup. And the Bees got a win. So I'm feeling a little bit better than I was on Saturday night. My name's Billy Grant. And like I said to you, I'm sitting here in the virtual joint with a couple of my buddies. I have got Mr. Laney in the house. And the last time I saw you, I left you in a cocktail bar in Putney, Laney. How you doing?
I was working as a waitress in a cocktail bar. That's where
you
I
were indeed.
Where I met you, mate.
That's right.
Yeah, it was a good night considering we lost to the Fulham. We stayed around Fulham, went to Aylesford, till quite late doors, as they say. Mm. So yeah, we had a good day regardless. We kicked the football out of the football eventually, and we just carried on with the drinking really. So yeah, but as you say, you know, yeah, the Saturday Tuesday, which is like the championship kind of routine, we've got that 2 weeks running. So we've got another Saturday Tuesday. We've got Everton, then the Crystal Palace all dayer to look forward to.
Yes. That's right. So looking forward to that, as we say. So and we've got the South Coast B, we've got the Cog in the house, Lewis Coughlin. How are you doing, Lewis?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah, all good, thanks, Bill.
That's right. You're looking a bit, you know, you look a bit Essex shaped, actually, you know, the Cog, as you say to you, because you look like you've travelled east, you know what I'm saying? You look sort of weather worn.
Yeah, back late last night from Colchester. So but all good, thanks. I enjoyed the game.
That's all good. So listen, so tell you something, we've got loads of things to talk about on this podcast. Obviously, we've got the Fulham game to chat about. We've got the Colchester game we're going to chat about as well. And also, we're looking forward to the weekend because we've got Everton who are coming down to New Griffin Park for the second time. You know, they were here last year. And like I said to you, it's the first time that we played Everton other than last year since we played them in, ironically, the League Cup, which is what we played Colchester in on Tuesday, which was a marvellous night. I think it's 2010, where Richard Lee made all sorts of ridiculous saves to actually put us through to the next round. And which is all good. So, like I said to you, we've got Connor from the Toffee Blues podcast who's going to be chatting to us about stuff. We've also got JB, who's going to be giving us some facts and some funk. But tell you what, I'm going to go back to chat to my buddies here about Saturday and about the weekend and about, listen, the Premier League in general. I'm going to be honest with you, I had no interest. When Brentford were in the Premier League, I never even watched Match of the Day. I didn't really watch it. I was fully ensconced in EFL football, lower league football. That's where my life has been for years. And like I said to you, have no interest. But obviously the last year or so, we've had to have a little bit of interest in Premier League football. So I've been watching the games, having a look around and seeing what's happened. And I said to you, the thing that I noticed the most about the Premier League, which I thought was a bit rubbish, is that, you know, as they say, there's like basically sort of three or four teams that are kind of pretty much run away with it. A few other teams that might try and push them if they can. And then there's the rest. And then you've got the relegation fodder, as they call them. Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's a really weird league where technically if you're down the bottom, you don't really compete at the top and so on and so forth. However, this season, I mean, I'm just asking the question now because there's been all sorts of ridiculous early upsets in the league. You know, obviously we had Brentford, you know, upsetting Man United. We had Fulham drawing with Liverpool early on. You know, we had Man United upsetting Liverpool a few days ago. We had, you know, Fulham upsetting everybody. We had Leeds upsetting Chelsea, smashing them the other night. And then everybody upsetting West Ham. And there's all sorts going on at the moment now, which shouldn't technically happen. And the one thing I just thought about the Premier League is that I always wanted Premier League to be a league where it's exciting with a Premier, like the Championship, where you can get, you know, somebody who's flying out at the top of the Championship, then they get beaten by, you know, but on Barnsley or, you know, Wickham Wanderers down at the bottom. And that, you know, that used to happen, and it made that league really exciting. So you go into the end of the season and you still got sort of 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 teams that can still go for a promotion. But you don't necessarily get that vibe in the Premier League. However, looking at these results, I'm just wondering, are things changing in the Premier League, and are sort of the inverted commas smaller clubs maybe getting a bit cleverer on working out how they can combat this big money? Laney?
I think it's early doors, mate. I think it's early days to be kind of making kind of sweeping kind of has it changed over the season. I do get your point, though. I think it's, you know, it has been a really exciting start to the season where it's been hard to kind of predict, you know, absolute dead certs for the big clubs. You know, I watched you know the Leeds Chelsea game, and I was kind of really surprised that, you know, they were almost doing a bit of a Brentford. They were kind of like, you know, just hassling and not paying much regard or respect to kind of like household names, and they were just getting stuck in. And that's the way we turned Man United over, was just not really allowing them to play, not letting them get settled. I think people might be getting savvy to the fact that if you can press high, you can, you know, you can produce quality moments of your own. And that's not just to say that, you know, you need to kind of just be running around like a blue ass fly, you know, biting and scratching and kind of just pushing people all over the place. I think, you know, you have
like to sheep, push, sheep, right, like 8-year-olds,
like 8-year-olds, yeah. you need to combine that high press with high quality. And I think that the teams that I've seen that have produced our results, you know, you said the Fulham against Liverpool on the first day of the season, us against Man United, you know, Leeds against Chelsea, and then Bournemouth against, you know, Aston Villa on that opening day. You know, they're kind of upsetting that apple cart, and I you know, I agree with you. I'd love for that to kind of carry on throughout the rest of the season. One more thing I will say, you know, you just said that you spent your life kind of almost ignoring the Premier League and the top flight, because assuming, like, similar to me, you never thought we'd get there. Not really. But now we are there. You know, I this isn't me saying I have lost interest in anything below the Prem, but you kind of have to realise that how little everything else is to the Prem. You know, even the Championship, you know, we used to think it was great that all our goals would be on a Saturday night on a separate programme. But you know, you really, I mean, I haven't got time to watch that now. And that's not me sort of like wiping the slate clean with my, you know, lower league soul, because, you know, there's a chance we'll be back there at some stage and I'll have to enjoy it all over again. But you do realise once you're in the top flight, how all-encompassing and how it out-trumps literally everything else.
I'm loyal, Laney. I never thought I'd hear you say something like that, mate. You know,
yeah,
what I'm
saying? Well,
so I'm gonna, yeah, right. We left to. I'm just getting the number of the substitutes for this podcast. Laney, oh. Laney's too big. Too big for this league now. He's too big for this league.
That's not what I said, though.
Listen, I've got the cog in the house. Cog, what's your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I mean, the game that I saw at the weekend, which was really exciting actually, was Man City against Newcastle. And that was really interesting because Newcastle really went at them. And we had a performance from Saint-Maximin, which was like as good as he played against us at St. James's Park last season. But they absolutely terrorised Man City. And that was really interesting, I think, because so often you see teams coming up against them pretty much keeping it tight. We were the same last season, home and away against them. And I think I get why we played that way. But it gave me real hope that if you really take them on, if you've got players with pace and skill and the pressing that Laney's talking about, you can actually get something through a really exciting football game. And that was like a really new template because I'm not seeing small teams, if you like, take on Man City in that way before. I think the other thing to me that's exciting is the re-emergence of Arsenal, because I think they will seriously challenge the top two this season. You can see the trajectory of that club. They've bought well, they've developed their younger players, and there's something quite exciting happening there, which I think could, you know, could well displace that kind of fairly established top two this season. Yeah, I think Leeds turning Chelsea over was a big surprise as well. So maybe there is something in that. Laney's right, it's early days, but there is, you know, if this is the beginning of something, it's a bit more open, a bit more competitive, then fantastic. And I think we have played our part in that as well. The way that we dismantled Man United will give other teams hope and an approach, a template, if you like, to do the same. So I really hope this league can become a bit more even. It is early days, but the signs so far are really quite encouraging, I think.
And I think probably where it comes from, you know, and every guest that comes on so far, I've asked them, you know, who do they think are going to be in the top four and in the bottom three as well. And I think that, you know, when you start it off, it gets quite predictable where people sort of say the bottom three are going to be the three that came up from the Championship and the top four are going to be Man City, Liverpool, you know, probably Chelsea and Tottenham or something like that. It'd be interesting to see how that changes over the next few weeks. And also what I will say is that I'm going to be honest with you now. If you ask who's going to finish in the bottom three, I bet you after 3 weeks or three games in this season, a lot of people will be, really confused as to who they're going to put down. Because if you sit down and you say, and we're going to talk about the Fulham game in a little bit, from the bottom of your heart, I think Fulham are going to be in the bottom three. My personal opinion is if they play out like they played against us and they played against Wolves and they played against Liverpool, you know, they're not going to be in the bottom three. And, you know, you've got teams like Aston Villa, you know, with Steven Gerrard, you've got Everton, who are a bit of a question mark you don't really know about. You've got Southampton, you've got Leicester, you've got all these clubs.
And Leicester.
That's right. That's right. These clubs here, which are all of a sudden, they start to become into the mix where you start thinking, well, actually, you know, you've got West Ham, who are bottom of the league, right? Insane. Okay, whether or not they stay there or not is a different story altogether. But the mad thing about it is that it has shifted everything. And maybe, you know, as you can see, you lose a few games at the beginning, it kind of changes the mindset of clubs. And if clubs start winning at the beginning, it changes their mindset. And it really does shift how the league shapes up, doesn't it, Laney?
Isn't it better, though, for it to be really predictable where the top six beat all the little clubs apart from us? I mean, because like, you know, the more points that the lower ones get, the harder it's going to be for us to guarantee survival. Because you're what we're saying is like the bottom 10 become a challenger. That makes it sort of very difficult for those bottom 10 to actually sort of pull away from what should be necessarily the weaker team. So careful what you wish for, Mr. Grant.
I hear what you're saying. I think I'm actually probably saying that maybe the bottom three or the bottom four, bottom five are maybe different to what everybody expects them to be because of just the way that things have changed. And maybe a few clubs have realised, you know, Crystal Palace, for example, yep. Right? Everyone sort of says, oh, they're always going to be in and around the relegation zone. But maybe Crystal Palace have worked out, this is what we need to do to get ourselves to the next level. And before you know it, they're actually taking points off the top sides and the sides who end up being bottom sides. Like, say, for example, I'm not saying they are, but I'm just using an example now. So West Ham or whoever it may be, do you understand? So all I'm just trying to say, there's a shift taking place. But listen, we've talked enough about that. because we can talk about that more in weeks to come. I think we need to go back to the weekend. I know we've been basically trying to find an excuse not to talk about the weekend, but we have to talk about the weekend. We have to go back to Putney, to SW6, to that park, whether it's called Bishop's Park, which we walked through, and we've got to talk about the match against Fulham. So Fulham, let me just put this here. When the final whistle went, I cast my mind back. Well, I did a few other things as well, but I cast my mind back and I thought, tell you what, look, they'd beaten us, but I have to admit, I can't actually remember the last time I've lost at this ground. So I know I'm not feeling particularly great, but this is a very rare feeling. Now, maybe Fulham fans are listening to think, they're finding excuses, but that is the truth. And you might also say, oh, yeah, but we were in the Premier League for X amount of years, but we have played Fulham quite a few times between 1990 and 2022. And basically, they never beat us. And I suppose they did a sort of the last time that we played them that we were allowed at the game when we got the last minute equaliser. I think that was the last time that we played them in the green. We were in the green when Maupay scored the goal and he was celebrating and everyone was celebrating and it was really good. They reversed the books on us this time, didn't they, Lainey?
Yes, they did. They did. We talked about this a little bit after the game, and I think it's worth sort of bringing up again that the rivalry is, you know, is as intense as ever. And we walked back through the park and back towards Putney Bridge, and you and I both said, I hope they lose every single game for the rest of the season, because it was just a bit,
because we're petty. We're really petty, aren't we?
We are petty, yeah, we are petty. And it was like there was some little snidey diggy comments. No one was threatening, I'll be if I'm honest with you, but there was like characters walking behind us, sort of like waiting for our reaction to whether, oh, you lost your cup final again, lads. You bottled it at Wembley, you bottled it again this afternoon. And I was like, didn't feel the same, you know. He didn't like the fact that I said, you know, it looks like you've eaten a cake for every day celebrating since like the Wembley game. And but it was
mate, David, yeah, that know, was that was uncalled for.
Put me on myself, but he was a large lad. But he was
large is beautiful.
He was one of those things. He wasn't both. It was. It didn't feel as bad, and I go back to that thing, you know, once all the time that they were in going to the top flight and we weren't, it really did smart, and that was always the kind of like the really really tenseness of the fixtures was we were both really pushing for promotion almost in every single year, you know, or a playoff place, and every single year we played them in the Championship, and so there was always something, there was always something, a bigger prize at stake. Didn't want them to get there, we wanted to get there ahead of them, but now we're both there, it's not the same. It is still really intense. I really wanted to beat them, and the atmosphere was great inside the ground and all of that. I get all of that, but after walking away, it just did. It felt like I don't think I was any more gutted than if we would have lost to Leicester on the first game of the season.
And Leicester.
And Leicester, yes. Oh, you child. I want to win every game, and I'm disappointed. There's jeopardy about every 3 points now in the Prem, because, you know, staying here is such a big thing for our club. Now we're investing all of this money in these incredible players. You know, we're building something for 5 years, 10 years. There's a commitment now to having to be here. So, you know, losing any game is kind of like, okay, right, that's right, we need to get on with the next one. So it was literally that more than anything else. But yeah, it just seemed to have lost that real, it didn't mean everything. It meant a lot, but not everything.
Nicole, did it mean everything to you?
Yeah, I know, I'd agree with what's being said, actually. I mean, it was a weird game, wasn't it? Because, you know, they were so strong in the first half. We pulled it back, very similar to I'm going to say the word, and I know what you two are going to say, but to Leicester.
And Leicester.
And but then, you know, sucker punch at the end, and we went away with nothing. And it would have felt so different if we'd hung on of course, if we'd won 3-2, that'd been amazing. But you know, that made it feel a bit kind of odd, I think. But there was a lot to be encouraged by in the second half, I think.
And do you think Thomas Frank gambled for 3 points? Okay, or do you think it was just one of them situations? Do you think, because there's an argument? I mean, listen, I'm not going to sit down there and say, oh, yeah, I know, right? Because I mean, I have to admit, when we were, I think even Laney might have said to me, you know, would you settle for a point now? And I just went, no, I want 3 points, because, you know, but as a fan, I wanted to beat Fulham. So when we were 2-2, I also felt that we were in the ascendancy. As we were coming into 2-2, I felt we were in this ascendancy. And so I was like, yes, I want us to win. And all of a sudden it's like, oh no, Fulham have seemed to come back into the game.
Can I have the draw now?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, but, I think you've got, you know, just the maths of it says that you've got to go for the win and gamble. You know, the difference is 2 points rather than one. So it always makes sense to go for it. I thought Godos was a slightly odd sub to come on. You know, that was a bit of an eye-opener, really. But I think that the principle of rolling the dice towards the end of a game is the right one to do. You know, you might as well go for all three rather than settle for one. And if you don't get the 1 point, then so be it. But, you know, the prize is worthwhile, I think. So, you know, I think generally he's good at this. He takes the risks, the kind of risks that Ferguson used to take at United, and rightly so, I think.
Elaine, I mean, you're talking about sort of kind of maybe slightly larger people. And let's talk about Mitro, because Mitro was I'd say, slightly larger footballer. I mean, obviously he's a footballer, so he's not large. But, you know, Mitrovic was a very different Mitrovic than what we saw 2 or 3 years ago. And I know people that know Mitrovic as well, very well, from the Serbian part of the world. And he's a player that, to be quite honest with you, I mean, he scores the goals in the Championship. And from what I can gather, he has got quite a lax attitude to life, you know, and he would go out with his people and he wouldn't necessarily, and this is, I'm not joking, allegedly, you know, have maybe the same kind of dietary kind of resilience that maybe some of our players might have, and he'll go off and just do what he wants, basically. So you know, when Mitro cup 2 or 3 seasons ago, he wasn't looking nearly as fit and as trim as he is now. And I thought that he was a nightmare, because he was running around, finding pockets, jumping around, giving Pontus all sorts of problems. And I was kind of praying for Mitrovic for the last couple of seasons, really, you know, or the two or three seasons ago, weren't you, Laney?
Yeah, he's obviously, you know, proven himself to be the player that, you know, he clearly has been. He had a, you know, really bad time in the last Premiership campaign with Fulham. He missed a lot of that. He had an incredible season in the Championship. He's an absolute unit. He's a nightmare to defend against, and we were dreading him getting that one chance. And you know, it was just a kick in the nuts that he got it in the last minute. We did okay-ish about him. We did okay-ish looking after him, but then Ray had pulled out a really great save. Like 3 or 4 minutes before he scored, he had one disallowed, did he not? It was a handful all afternoon, and he was kind of like an Ivan Toney kind of player. You know, that's what our opponents have to look out for every game. Someone who's kind of like in their faces. He's such a physical presence, and he's clinical. So yeah, we knew what he was capable of, and he underlined it.
Yeah, and I've got to ask a quick question before we go and listen to what the fans had to say straight after the match. I'm just wondering, right, okay, so listen, the game could have actually been, if you think about it, because listen, let's just remove ourselves from the scenario. It was actually a really good game, and it could have been really brilliant, because it could have gone either way. You know, you're 2-0 down, you know, and then you flip it to come back to 2-2. And also before the game, they decided to put, you know, Free From Desire on the tannoy as well, which is only good for us, because the one thing I was saying, and I'm going to talk about the Fulham fans in a minute, is like, we were singing and we were having a right laugh before the game, and it was great. And it was almost like, you know, it's almost like they put Peter Gillam, you know, in the Fulham box to play our music. And it all you know, it all was perfect. We had a right good sing song. We had a good dance. And then we came at the game and it wasn't even a minute and we were a goal behind. And I'm just wondering whether or not, you know, the players were still in Man United mode, Man United celebration mode, because like literally that goal was the most ridiculously embarrassing goal to give away. It was pinging all over the place, wasn't it? And we were just, we were all over the place.
It was just a poorest start to the game that there could have been. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. When they put the gala track on, I thought that's the last thing you want to do. And it literally pumps the away end up. I thought the Fulham support pretty much all afternoon was awful. It just shows you what a great thing we've got going on at the G-Tech or the new Griffin Park.
New Griffin Park.
We've got the atmosphere and we've got the intensity and we've got the team. And, you know, I have to say, you know, I do like Craven Cottage as a ground. There's something special about it, but the atmosphere is just poor from the home support, you know? Mm. So, you know, to give that goal away in the first couple of minutes, it was just awful. And just to be two down within 11. And, you know, you said, you know, should we, you know, well, I did say to you, do you want to take, you know, would you take a point now? I would have taken the point because it at 2-0 down, it seemed such a long way away from getting a point out of that game. Once we got to the point, you know, and the disallowed goal, which, you know, we could speak an hour about that. You know, Tony's first goal, which he took brilliantly, his toenail was offside. You know, once we actually got the equaliser, again, that I would have just, I would have pressed the stop button there and then just taking that point because that was incredible comeback. You know, as I said before, it was kicking the nuts to get the Mitrovic winner at the death.
That's right. So listen, we're going to go over to Craven Cottage where we were on Saturday, where we were with the fans. We spoke to the fans. We actually stayed behind quite a long time after the game. And we were the last fans, actually, I think pretty much in the stadium when we spoke to fans, both Brentford fans and Fulham fans. After the game.
Oh my God, you can't believe how they've ended up getting that. I thought second half, well, after their second goal actually in the first half, we got a grip on the game, started to take over, and did most of the game. Psychology kicks in, we get the equaliser 2-2, and we start getting a bit nervy, a bit panicky. Not just the players, me as well, fans, we start getting a bit panicky. So gutted that it happened so late in the game that we had no chance to come back from it, but there you go.
Real shame to lose it. We threw it away in the first 20 minutes, I think. Gave ourselves a mountain to climb. Looked like we got back, looked like we might have won it, but unfortunately Mitrovic had to be, didn't it? Taking off Wiesa, bringing on Godos, I didn't quite get that change. We seemed to be really threatening when we had Tony sort of winning headers, holding it up, and then loads of pace in behind with Wiesa. I mean, Godos, not the same sort of player, and we just seemed to lose that, I think. Lost a bit of momentum, I don't know. But they got a bit lucky as well. It's not as though they were sort of knocking down the door, were they? They just got a chance and took it, so.
I wasn't happy that even Tony went down. He should have stayed on his feet and took the shot. The other one was the first half. They allowed Mitrovic to have the ball at his feet with no one up his arse. And that's where the two goals come from every time. Then the third goal was just us rushing. You got to go for the win, I'm happy for that. But to be honest, they rushed the ball out of the box from Raya. They nicked the ball, pushed it wide, Mitrovic at the back post. So you got ourselves to blame probably for all three goals. But the one where Tony went down, where he went down, he's 4 or 5 yards from goal to try and get a penalty. That was a decision. If he had banged that shot in, far corner, it's a different game, isn't it? It's them big game, big decisions, big elements in big games, mate. And that was it.
The 80th minute, we decided to go for a draw. We sat back there, you know, KLP sat back, and we thought, let's settle for a draw here. And that's exactly what happened. The Mitrovic come on and had that header in the last sort of fight, you know, last minute of the game there. And I thought, that's exactly what happened. As we sat back, let's have a draw here, and that's what happens.
Two great managers, actually. I thought, you know, Silva clearly took the game to us in the first half and shocked us. We should have been ready for that. Well, I guess we'd question whether we should have lined up as 5-3-2 like we did against United. We didn't. We were 4-3-3. So fair play, Silva. I thought we came back in the second half. Well, we came back at the end of the first half, of course, and that changed the game. And then Thomas, his substitutions in the second half were good. we got ourselves back into the game, and then fair play Silva. I think there's two substitutions at the end. Probably just changed the flow of the game, and Mitrovic, I don't know what that XG was at the end there, but maybe a 5% chance he stuck it in. So a great game for everyone, I think.
After that, you know, we were saying, I'll take a draw, and you could feel there was a winner in it. Could have been ours as much as theirs. But a good day's entertainment at the end of the day. You know, we're 4 points. You know, we're looking solid. I liked some of the new boys. You know, Lewis Potter looked really tidy coming on. Very nimble feet. And I'm optimistic for the season. You know, goal is to stay up, and I think we're going to.
Started off with an odd formation, as we did at Leicester, and we were playing catch-up from 2-0 down. We got to 2-0 down. We were playing all right. It was all us in the second half, but everybody around me just saying, don't let them stand the ball up for Mitrovic at the far post. And we fell asleep, lost our concentration, and paid the price for it. But on the optimistic side, we played so well in that second half.
We were saying to ourselves that we had to hang on for the first 15 minutes in the second half. If we could keep you out for those first 15 minutes, we might maintain the lead, and you equalise. Couldn't believe it.
I thought we were going to win it.
But you deserved it. You deserved it. You were finding your players. All your passing game was perfect in the second half. I'll tell you what. Neither of them two teams will go down. Not playing like that, they won't. Both them teams will stay up.
We've come off hopefully a really good start, yeah? Like, draw, beat, smashing United. We're world news. So 4 points after two games is a great start with third in the Premier League, right? So, but that works in two ways. Like, for me, listen, we all love the United win. Amazing. For me, the Fulham game was the game. I wanted us to turn up today and really be up for it. And it felt that, listen, when they score in 60 seconds, it shows that they're more up for it than we were. And I thought the first 20 minutes proves that they wanted to win more than we did. And you know, very rarely in the last 10 years have we said that against Fulham. We've always arrived hungrier, more up for it, bang up for the game. Today was the exception. That wasn't the case. They for the first 20 minutes dominated us. They come at us double hard, and you know, it was 2-0. And I actually thought they went easy on us, because at half time, after two, they should have put a knee down. They didn't. They started defending. I don't know why, because they could have had a third and let us in the game. But yeah, it's a strange one today. Disappointing, of course. I thought we'd done ourselves all right, but. Yeah, the Fulham wanted it more. And that isn't a thing you say very often when it comes to Brentford and Fulham.
So there you go, the Bees fans and Fulham fans after the game. I have to say, actually, I'm going to mention this point now. This is obviously the first time that we've played. We were meant to play Fulham on the day that basically football stopped. And I remember that very, very clearly. I had a ticket with my daughter and her mate, and we were going to go down to Craven Cottage. It was a Friday night. I was waiting to pick her up from school, and then we were ready to go down. And then all of a sudden I've got a phone call saying the match isn't on, and I was gutted. And there was only 2,000 tickets then that we had as well. So it was, tickets were like, you know, rocking all shit like they were for the last game as well. So I was so pleased to go down there with the daughter and stuff like that, you know, to go down there as well. And I remember that season, because they were doing the works on that massive stand that they're going to struggle to fill at Fulham. I've not been childish, but I think it's true. The behind the goal was normally, like I said to you, the first time we went down to Craven Cottage in recent years, when we went down there for the 4-1, just in the Warburton years, and we got 7,000 tickets, and we literally took the whole end, and we really did take the piss that year, and it was brilliant, you know what I'm saying? And so you sort of think, this is fantastic, we've got the whole end, but now they've restricted it, whereas you've only got like half that end, and then they put the Fulham fans on the other half to you as well, so you've basically got two fans in the same end. But the weird thing about it is that as you come out of the game, basically come out, Brentford fans and Fulham fans come out the same entrance and go out the same way, and you're basically sharing the same concourse. And I thought that was really bizarre, didn't you, Lainey?
Yes, it's always something really odd about that end. It's a strange sort of semi-permanent kind of Meccano affair that's been poshed up a bit. So from the outside, you know, looking at it, it looks like a normal stand, but it's far from a normal stand. It's scaffolding and all sorts. It's like
Gillingham. it's like a posh Gillingham away end, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like a clad Gillingham, and you know, yeah, walking into that. To the away end, and everyone milling around and kind of mixing. It's really odd. And then walking out, everyone together, and then kind of splitting up. You know, you're taking good behaviour for granted there. I know there's a lot of police around, but you know, you walk straight out into you know, a mix of away and home fans, and you know, especially on a kind of a heightened game like Saturday's, it's got the potential for it getting a little bit wrong is quite high, I'd say.
Yeah, coming back to the fans thing as well. I mean, again, we can talk about this now, and I'm seriously, we're not talking about it because we again, I keep coming back to that Man United podcast, who I think were really bitter, and they said some things which were slightly bitter and we didn't agree with them. We don't want to come across like that. But what I will say is that, you know, I sat down, you know, or sat down, stood up, and I looked around me where, as I said to you, I think, you know, first of all, I said to you, Fulham, I do think, have a nice stadium. I mean, they've got that new big new stand on the right-hand side, which hasn't been filled as yet, which I've bit of a question mark about, you know, and I think that's the sand, the Riverside sand, where season tickets are £1,000. And the season tickets are £1,000. They did have people sitting in the bottom of the Riverside stand who didn't get up or didn't really sing at all. I'm not surprised, because if they paid £1,000, they want to make the most of that comfy seat that they're sitting on, like, you know. But I looked at when they went ahead and they were winning. And I just thought, the thing is, they don't actually really sing, and the whole stadium is sitting. And I know, like, a lot of people say, well, that's what you're meant to do at a stadium. And they just had a little band of fans at the back who stood right at the back of the other stand, but everywhere else was sort of static, and they didn't have that kind of pottiness of kind of getting the team going and going on for it. It's just, it's a really different way to enjoy your football. And also, the one thing I say, and I'm not sort of kind of giving them sort of words of what they should do. Obviously, you know, we planned to play them for years, and then they came down to our ground. They went 1-0 up, and then we went 1-1, and then, you know, Hotter scored in the last minute, and spontaneously the song was Hotter in the last minute. We kept singing that the whole time, and then, you know, we were saying, when we went down there, they scored a goal in the last minute. Now, surely, if Brentford had been taking the piss out of you for the last 8 years about scoring a goal in the last minute with your key player, I'm sure they should have been flipping that on their head on us, but it just didn't come, because this is just a different vibe, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, there's something special that we've got going on, and maybe Fulham are, you know, more used to top flight football. I don't know. But yeah, there's, you know, the atmosphere at New Griffin Park is pretty special these days, and obviously was at Griffin Park as well.
Yeah. Okay. So coming back to the game, the cog. First off, we were really bad. We were rubbish, and Fulham were all over us. And I say fair play to them. We got I wouldn't say fortuitous goal, because when I saw it back on the TV, I thought, oh, God, blimey, that was a brilliant goal, that was. Snorgaard scored a fantastic goal, brought us back into the game. Last thing Fulham wanted, because it was dead on half time. And then the second half, we really went at them, and I thought Fulham were struggling. They were, that whole thing that they had where they kind of managed to get onto the ball and wouldn't allow us to get onto the ball, we were like passing the ball around, and they were struggling, and you could feel that the game was ebbing away from them, you know. So we kind of came back to, you know, to tool in the end. But we also had, as Laney said, a couple of goals, I think it was two goals disallowed by Ivan Toney. Now, one goal in particular, because even at the time it was ruled off for offside, and we've seen the offside decision that was given, and I don't want to be sitting there talking about VAR and offside decision, because everyone kind of does that. But you just kind of ask yourself, what's the point? And I know there's an article written by Nemoni as well, who just talked about the VAR and the offside, and, you know, and these decisions that, listen, they go against you on both ways. But I mean, the way that Ivan Toney scored, oh, I can't remember which one it was, but he scored a goal which was disallowed. It was a brilliant goal that he scored. Obviously didn't count, and if those goals counted, it would have been a different situation altogether. But these things, sometimes you could ignore them, but sometimes you say, forget about being full and everything like that. It's kind of like there's got to be some sort of leeway, because it's technically, yes, it may be, because it's a minuscule millimeter over the line, but it's obviously not affecting the game, and surely these decisions should affect the game. And I thought they were going to change that, isn't it, the cog?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we definitely need VAR, and I know it slows things down at times, but it gets rid of bad decisions, and it gets rid of pressure that some of the officials are under, particularly from home fans. So I think it, you know, the spirit of it, I think, is that it's meant to, you know, stop kind of injustice. When you've got a striker level with a defender, as Toney was in, you know, from pretty much any angle, I think that you let those go, you know, and it's meant to be there, as I understand it, to prevent really poor decisions, real errors when the ref's been unsighted or, you know, where he's just got something wrong. You know, that wasn't a wrong decision. It was so marginal that it was ludicrous. And again, I just think we all need to be a bit clearer about what VAR is actually there for. I mean, it's still relatively early. You know, you look at sports like cricket and rugby, they've kind of been living with it for a long time. So they've got a much better handle on what its purpose is, how to interpret it, etc. But yeah, that was one of those decisions that I thought shouldn't have been overturned, you know, fairly clearly, I think. There's been one or two of them recently. I think in general, it's heading in the right direction, actually. You know, there's been some ludicrous periods where VAR has just, you know, not added to the game at all and actually detracted from it. And I just hope we're not going to revert back to that, because generally VAR is being applied more sensibly as we move on, I think.
I'm not even sure that the, you know, how do they know the accuracy of when the actual ball left the foot of the person that was making the pass? I mean, how accurate is that? You know, they're saying that that's when the ball was played. Tony was a toenail offside. Is the accuracy of the point two of a millimeter as the ball leaves the foot of whoever played the ball in? I'm not, you know, is that cast iron? Is that 1,000,000% accurate? So we're assuming that that's when the ball was played, but was that really when the ball was played? I think there's a lot of we're assuming a lot of about the accuracy of the first part of the equation, and then just looking at where the you know, a line that's been drawn by someone. Well, was that line, what does it actually mean? You know, that's my problem with it. Is we don't see the other picture, do we? We don't see a picture, a snapshot that's taken within a thousandth of a second of the ball leaving someone's foot. We need to see both of those photographs before we can know whether there's any justice been made.
Yeah.
Right, just giving you a lowdown on the match, just quickly, Fulham. And they constitute their value for their money. They created a high number of chances relative to their possession. They also created goal scoring opportunities from the flanks and also from set pieces. They were caught offside quite often as well. As for the Bees, you know, we effectively creating goal scoring opportunities from set pieces, which is pretty much that as it. We caught offside often as well. Fulham went down the middle as well, and they had like high shot frequency when they were in possession, and basically they liked to cross the ball. They knew that was our Achilles heel, so that's what they did. We were attacked down the left and through the middle, and we liked the long balls as well. And we favoured our through balls as well. You know, talking about players, I mean, I thought Pereira had a brilliant game for Fulham as well, and I was like, oh no, like, you know, Paulinho as well had a good game as well. But Ivan Toney is probably at top of the pile for the Bees as well, and besotted global. We ran our man of the match. We do our man of the match every week. Goes out to our besotted global crew and other people out there who can vote on the man of the match. And it was Ivan Toney who came in at number one, the besotted global man of the match, with Raya number two and Norgard number three. Thank you, Mr. The Genford, over the Tasmanian bee out there, who's been doing his mathematics and working all this stuff out and doing it for us. So big respect to you as well. So, yeah, so, but from the Brentford point of view, I mean, Ivan Toney, he looks like he's got the bit between his teeth, doesn't he, the cog?
Yeah, he does. And he was really influential last night as well, actually, at Colchester. I thought when he came on, he just, you know, he was a calming influence. You could see his quality in both boxes. He just kind of was on a slightly different level to all of the other players on the pitch. And he's made a good start to the season. And I think if you look, I was reading some stat that if you look at the last 14 games, I think, across the end of last season, the start of this, he's been involved in like 11 or 12 goals or something. So he's really productive at the moment. And, you know, that's a really good sign, I think.
Do you think he's playing for a move then, the cog?
I hope not. I mean, there's not much time left for him to do so. So I hope not. I mean, I'm hoping that he will see quality coming in. You know, I'm hoping he's buying into what the club's trying to do and wants to be a part of that. But you know, we know that he's capable of having his head turned, and so you know, I wouldn't count any chickens. But if he stays, I think he's going to have a really good season for us.
That's right. And there's a few, again, new rumours. I think there's on the BBC site as well, saying, you know, a few clubs, including Chelsea, and I can't remember the other two clubs, probably Newcastle or somebody else like that, you know, are looking to make a move for Ivan Toney. And £60 million was quoted. As far as I'm concerned, like I say to you, I believe until they put money on the table and the clubs have rejected it, then it doesn't really matter what they're going to say. And I spoke to my Chelsea mate about it, who's, you know, he's very bullish about Chelsea. And he just went, oh, if he comes to Chelsea, they'll turn him to crap like they've done with all the other players that we bought. So he's not very complimentary about his own side at the moment now. But then they did lose to Leeds, and talk about that Leeds score as well. I will say that I think we can't moan about that Chelsea score, the Leeds score against Chelsea, because it is all our fault. Because if we'd actually beaten Leeds on the last game of the season, they would have got relegated, and we wouldn't it wouldn't even be an issue. So just quickly, XG wise on the match against Fulham got 2.83. they got nearly 3 XG. I mean, they got loads of massive bubbles, probably most of them in the first half as well. There's a couple in the second half, but they were all over us. They created a lot of chances. We've got sort of two or three big bubbles in the area as well, which means that we created big chance opportunities as well, including the goals as well. We've got a lot of smaller ones as well. I think we were quite clinical when the chances that we did get, and obviously we had a couple of chances that were ruled out, which I'm not quite sure count on the XG chart. So I think there's a lesson learned in there. Thomas Frank was gutted we didn't get a result, but he said that he was very pleased about certain aspects of the game, which obviously means maybe how we played in the second half. So hopefully he's going to take that forward to next week. But anyway, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go away and I'm going to have a little drink. And then JB is going to give you some facts and funk. Then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about Colchester.
Hello, Jonathan Birchall here again. On balance, our away record at Fulham is still favourable, with just two defeats in our last 20 League and Cup visits. Although we came away from Saturday without any points, we did take our tally of goals scored to 8, with just Arsenal and Manchester City having scored more. It's only the fifth time in the last 50 years that we've been so prolific in front of goal in the opening three fixtures. Our trip to Colchester was the first time since the League Cup started in 1960 that we were a top tier side visiting a fourth tier side. Only once were we a fourth tier side hosting a top tier side in a straight knockout match as opposed to two legs, and that was 60 years ago when we lost 4-1 to Sheffield United at Griffin Park. And Thomas Frank set another club record as the first manager or head coach to take us into the third round for a third time. We now go into our fourth league game, although in the recent past it's a fixture where we've taken just 2 points from a possible 24. The last win was when Uwe Rosler's Bees beat Dean Smith's Walsall 1-0 thanks to a Clayton Donaldson winner back in 2013.
So, Laney, up for the cup, are you?
Yeah, I am up for the cup. I mean, you know, I think Thomas Frank, he's done us proud the last few years, and the players have as well. I mean, obviously, coming in not at the first round means, you know, it's one banana skin opportunity avoided. But then, you know, going away to Colchester is never to be taken lightly. You know, we went there last time, we just clinched our promotion to the Championship, and we got done over 4-1. It was an incredible day, but you know, it's an incredibly crap place to go to watch football. You know, my memories of Layer Road are always tainted by us losing 6-1 there. On my, I think it was 6-0 or 6-1. First time I visited there,
in that wooden stand behind the goal, wouldn't it?
Wooden stand. Behind the goal.
Yeah, I think I got. I didn't see that game. I got into the ground, but I kind of didn't see the whole game. I went. Okay. That's all I can say. Yes.
Yes. So Colchester's not been, you know, a happy. I know we have won there, but it's just a new stadium is just shocking, isn't it? It's, you know, it's out of town. It's right next to the A10 or whatever it is, or A11 or whatever, and it's just awful. They've swapped out one crap ground for another crap ground, and you know, I feel sorry for them, because that's where they're at. But going there last night, quality showed in the end. We put out a team that was lighter but still strong enough, and Damsgaard making his debut and things like that, and KLP scoring for us. It was a lot of positives to be taken out of that, and we look forward to the draw tonight.
The cog, I mean, game like the Colchester game, the thing about it, I said, with these cup games, I think what you do is that, first of all, you use it to look at players who are coming through, who potentially may be inside, may be coming up into the first team as well. And, you know, you, like I said to you, just look at it from a different angle. So it's a bit difficult, because as a fan, you want to play these cup games, you want to win these cup games, but at the same time, you also know there's a lot of experimentation going on. Now, Thomas Frank has obviously got to balance up the two, because obviously he wants the experimentation, but he wants to win, because it's now well-known fact that Thomas Frank says that he wants to win the League Cup this year. He feels that this is the year that he's got to go and win something, because we're in the Premier League, and he thinks that this is a cup that we can go and win. So he's obviously set up that team for us to go and win, and you can see he's put Ivan Tony on the bench. You know, he basically put out a reasonably strong bench if we needed to call upon it. Like, you know, now, overall, the Bees kind of did well in the game, but they didn't have the rule of the roost, did they?
No, they didn't. And, you know, at times we were really under the cosh, actually. You know, that they missed a few fairly easy chances. We looked vulnerable once again from corners in particular. And I think it's partly a fact that, you know, you've got some new players playing alongside some more established players, but a lot of them won't have played a proper competitive A-team game, if you like, together before, and it showed. But it was, you know, you're right, in the end, quality did kind of shine through. First goal was a real highlight, you know, beautiful ball from Baptiste, right. Through to Lewis Potter. That was a superb goal, and you know, there's some good performances. I thought Baptiste looked good. I thought Lewis Potter looked sharp. It was great to see Damsgaard for the first time, and really encouraging to see Zanka come back and get a game under his belt. So it was a little bit of a non-event, really. The ground was half empty. And I agree with everything Laney's just said about where the ground is. It's not my idea of a good location for a football ground at all. But we got the job done. I think the on the downside, you know, there were a couple of injuries. The Ruslev one looked as though it was possibly quite serious. Lewis Potter limped off as well. And there were some quite naughty tackles going in, you know, really, really late from Colchester, which the ref did not clamp down on. So Baptiste was getting, you know, a lot of treatment as well. And that was a bit worrying, really. You know, I don't know how bad the Ruslev one is, but I'd be very surprised if he's able to play at the weekend or even at Palace. So that was probably one of the downsides of the evening. Another shaky performance from Mads Beck, I thought, and Thomas the Tank. You know, he's not at the moment looking at the level that he needs to be at if he's going to genuinely challenge for a first team place. We did look better when some of the big guns came on. Josh brought his quality to the game as usual. Like I've said, Ivan Tony, I thought, was superb when he came on, and Visa added something as well. So I think overall it was, you know, it wasn't much of an enjoyable football experience, but it's quite interesting and good to see some of the newer players, some of the more fringe players get an outing. I thought it was one of the first times I've seen him actually for the first team, You know, I thought that Finn Stevens had a really good game. He's playing on the left side of the defence, and he tried a couple of switches, one of which came off beautifully. The other one didn't quite reach his man, but you could see a player there with real vision and real promise. So that was good to see him in the flesh rather than on the bench. He seemed to have been an unused sub on so many occasions last season. It was really good to see him get the best part of 90 minutes.
You've summed that up really well, mate. While you're on a flow, I mean, the one thing that really wound me up was the referee's reaction to Rozvev. It kind of trying to get him off the pitch when he was clearly in discomfort.
Yeah. Yeah,
can you? Because we talked about that on socials later on in the day as well. You got quite vexed about that. Can you kind of sum that up as well?
Yeah, I mean, he was, you know, just didn't seem to have an appreciation of how much pain Rozlev was in, and he was just trying to get him off the pitch, get the game moving again. And you could see that it was a bad injury, and that was really disappointing. And I don't know who the ref was, but you could see that, you know, if he was a lower league ref, then that wouldn't surprise me at all. And I was casting my mind back to Premier League games when the ref, you know, could be really quite influential in the way that a game goes. And he just didn't establish control from the first minute. He was letting stuff go, and it was really dangerous at times.
And talking about, I mean, you talked about Mads Bechtsson, who you said didn't have a great game. I mean, we talk about aerial domination, which again, you know, you've got the question marks as to, you know, how much can we dominate in the air? You know, Strakosa, our goalkeeper, who's our sub goalkeeper as well, was a little bit dodgy at coming to crosses. But Mads Beck, to be fair to him, he actually, when you're talking about playing the ball out, he actually played a couple of really good balls. You know, one of them to Baptiste, and I think of them, it might have been both to Baptiste as well, or maybe one of them is to Keane Lewis-Potter as well. He played some really incisive balls forward, actually, which actually kind of started an attack play, didn't he?
That is true, yeah. I don't want to say that he was disastrous, because he wasn't. I think there was just some of he did play a couple of very good through balls. I think it's just some of the failings that we've seen him, which worry me towards the end of last season, the start of this season, were coming back, just looking unsure of where he should be, losing his man and looking kind of quite immobile, really. I think his performance levels have fallen off, and I wonder whether, you know, this is to do with the injury that he had last season. But he looked to me a better player before the injury than he has done since. And I hope that's just a temporary thing. But at the moment, I would really worry about him starting in the Premier League. I just don't think he's an option to do so, unfortunately.
Okay, and I'm going to ask you also, I mean, Ivan Toney, how do you think Ivan Toney feels? I mean, he touched that ball, and he thought, this is going in the back of the net, and I've got another goal notched up on my goal sheet card. And then he turned around and he basically sort of called a cannoned off Mads Beck and got in the back of the net. And basically Mads Beck probably didn't even know it, scored it himself, didn't he? You saw the reaction of Ivan Toney after that when he saw that Mads Beck had basically nicked his goal, didn't you?
Yeah, fair play. I mean, I think, you know, he's got an assist there, hasn't he?
he looked really embarrassed, didn't he? Like, he looked like he was going to get a kick in after the game to get him in the way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Last thing I'm going to just talk about this game. It just goes to show you, and this game I think is a real kind of, you know, it encompasses where we've come from. Colchester is a team that basically we used to go and visit all the time. The amount of fans out there that would say, oh, I've been to Colchester, I've been to Layer Road, I've been to this, I've been to go see them play. Like I said to you, they were the team that we went to visit when we got promoted. We were already promoted, last, I think, away game of the season. We went to Colchester, got smashed up 4-1, and it just reminded us of being in that division. There's nothing, I still love going to those places. I do really miss going to those places, but just coming back to players out there, there was a player on that pitch and he was playing for Colchester. And I went, oh, blimey. He was like a player who played for us when we first started the sort of Benham revolution, John Akinde. Remember John Akinde, who was a striker at the time. We were sort of in the third division, and he was knocking and he was scoring goals for fun, if I remember rightly. Well, actually, no, he wasn't. He was playing for Wickham alone, and he hadn't scored many for them. But before that, he was in the non-league, I think, up Websley and Margate. And then he went to Bristol City. But it was like, oh, John Akinde, I think he's a, you know, he's a really great player. We should really get him. I think we got him in on loan for two games, whenever we played against Wickham Wanderers. And I think he scored now zero goals for us. But he reminds me of that era, which was 2010, which he came to Brentford, played for us in a time when we had no idea about Premier League, that we're going to be in the Premier League. And we were playing Colchester. And now he's, you know, we played Colchester with Akinde, who was at the beginning of the Benham Revolution, Laney.
Yeah, a good lower league journeyman striker. Yeah, you know, he's had a really good career. He's scored a decent amount of goals. He's, you know, he's always been able to find the next club. That's always a sign of a good striker. There's always someone looking to take you on. It obviously, you know, wasn't one for us, but there probably was a time where he certainly was. It really does show you how far we've come. And, you know, we have to keep pinching ourselves and reminding ourselves that we can't take this for granted. But, you know, we have to be confident. The squad that we've got now is not only equipped to go really long in this Carabao Cup again. It's equipped to really push for, you know, a top half Premiership finish as well. So we just need to, you know, that's why, again, just losing on Saturday to be unbeaten would have been kind of like a real cherry on the cake, because it's been a, you know, we've scored lots of goals at the beginning of the season, and it's, you know, to have a point from Saturday, I think, was something that, you know, something we gave up, we lost at the end.
Okay, and just finally, League Cup, because we are up for the Cup. Who would you like in the third round?
Personally, I'll go for, once again, a third tier team at home. You know, we had the Forest Green Rovers and Oldham at home in those sort of second and third rounds last year. We smashed Oldham 7, didn't we, when we had that Wiesa brilliant overhead kick. So there's lots of positives for having home games where we can get minutes and get on the front foot and not have, you know, those horrendous tackles coming in from those away games. I think at home on our own patch, playing our own football, we need to get minutes. There's lots of plus points for the Premier League. So someone poor at home, I'd say.
The Cog?
Yeah, I totally agree. Nothing. Haven't got anything different to say. Nice, easy game at home.
Okay, but just give us a team then, both of you.
Not sure.
Crawley.
Crawley, Laney, and then Cog, the Cog.
QPR.
Ooh,
they're out. Interested. They're out.
I can see that. Basically, you just don't, you know, just don't care, do you? You know what I'm saying? Just don't make it anything. Just ask.
He's
just
proved my point from earlier. He's not paid any attention to the lower leagues.
That's right. For me, actually, I don't even know if they're in it, because I haven't checked the results, or maybe they're playing tonight. And this is a dangerous one, actually, because they're doing very well at the top of the second division, or Division 2. I would actually quite like Leighton Orient, because of that old beef that we had with them, because it might actually be a bit of a sort of a stickler game, and they'll bring quite a few fans down as well. So that could be quite a juicy one. The last time we played them is when we got the boat down from Kew Bridge down to East London, and they just gave us half their ground, and we beat them 1-0 and got promoted, and they hated us, and we haven't played them since. So I think it's time that we meet Orient again. Would you like that, Laney?
Yep. A local derby is always good, you know. It's there's something about it, but I mean, I'm really not bothered, if I'm honest with you. Just someone we can get past without too much of a sweat, but yes. someone we can really set ourselves up and use it as a kind of like a real attack versus defense kind of scenario.
Okay, and talking about attack versus defense, hopefully our attack will be attacking Everton's defence on Saturday as they come down to New Griffin Park. I'm going to go off, get myself another drink. I'm sure Laney and the Cog will too. And we'll come back and we'll talk about the Everton game. Saturday, Everton come down to our manor, like I said to you, second time. a couple of years, and before that you came 10 years ago or 11 years ago, and then before that I've got no idea the last time that Everton come down. So they're not frequent visitors to our manor, so we welcome them, and hopefully they can come down, they can drink in our boozers in Brentford and in Kew, and then they can go home very sad. No, he says that. No, actually, no, but let's be realistic about this now. Everton, they didn't have a brilliant season last season, but they do have players of quality. I mean, I know we're going to hear from Connor from the Toffee Blues podcast as well, who's a little bit nervous about them this season. But the fact is, it's kind of like, it's not necessarily a case that you haven't got decent players. It's a case of like bringing the jigsaw together and bringing the pieces together and actually, you know, making it all kind of work. And that may be the issue with Everton, isn't it, the Cog?
Yeah, I mean, I think it could be quite a good time to play them. There's a lot of discussion about Gordon and is he going to go off to Chelsea or somewhere similar, which I think would be a disastrous move for him, actually. But, you know, I thought in the games last season, he was really was their standout player. They've lost Richarlison, so that surly cheat has gone off to sit on the bench at Spurs, which is great. And Calvert-Lewin is injured. So I think that, you know, this is a good time to play them. And we've got to rate them as one of the poorest sides in the league. We saw that last season. I haven't seen any sign of improvement for them. So this is a game that we really have to look to win, I think.
That's right. Listen, we could talk Everton all we want, but I'll tell you what's going to be easier, actually. Let's go up to Everton. Let's talk to Connor from the Toffee Blues Everton podcast, and then we can come back and then we can talk about Everton. This is Connor from Toffee Blues podcast.
Hi, my name's Connor Williams and I am a presenter for the Toffee Blues YouTube channel. It's an Everton fan channel, and I'm just speaking about how Everton will go on this season. I think it's going to be another tough season for us, in complete honesty. I think we're going to struggle again. It's not going to be very fun to watch, but I guess that's football, isn't it? You know how it goes. Last season was really, really tough for us. Like I just said, I think this season will follow it, but really, really tough. You had the Rafa Benitez appointment, which was never a good idea. Fans could never get on board with that. Dire football under him. A dire summer of no spending as well leading into it. Had to sell the likes of Luca Dean, let James Rodriguez go, some of the players that were our luxury players, if you will, our pretty players, good on the ball, our creative players, and then mainly reportedly due to the manager as well, Luca Dean apparently leaving because he was unhappy with the way the manager was setting up his style of football, which was defensive and horrible to watch. So obviously we sold him, then we sacked him, got Frank Lampard, who's still a novice. I'm not completely sold on Frank Lampard as a manager, still a novice on it. Didn't really have the experience for a relegation battle and was sort of chucked into it. It looked touch and go for even at any point. I thought we could fall into it. And then there were pits where I thought we'd do all right, but then we dropped really into it. And obviously Crystal Palace, the second to last game of the season, last home game, really pulled it out there to win that. Had to win that because we had Arsenal next away, who we lost, I think, 5-0 to. But you could argue there was literally nothing in it then, but you don't want to go to that type of game needing something either. So, yeah, it was a really, really poor season. One of the worst seasons I've in my lifetime supporting Everton. It's an easy, like, 1 out of 10, 2 out of 10. I can't even see. The only positive is that we stayed up, which is a horrible positive, really. Like, don't get me wrong, it could be worse. Probably a 2, because a 1 would be if we'd went down. So maybe a 2. But, yeah, really, really, really shocking. As for this season, I think we're still going to be in a tough one. Looking at the pre-season games and the games we've played already in the Premier League, we lack a lot of creativity. Again, don't have a striker. Solomon Rondon's our only striker because Dominic Calvert-Lewin's injured. We're missing chances that a good striker finishes. 2 weeks as of recording this left of the window. Needs to be a big window. We brought in McNeil. We brought in Vinagre on loan. Connor Cody. Got James Tarkowski on a free. which were okay signings, but I feel like without a dominant striker, you're just putting pieces, you know, square pieces in circle holes. Need somebody for McNeil. He's a great crosser. That's what he's more renowned for, and we've got nobody for him to cross to till Dominic Calvert-Lewin's back. Bernard Gray's purely a backup. James Tarkowski is a good acquisition. So is Connor Cody on loan. They're quite sensible. Onana looks to be a good player, but he's still very raw and young, so there's a lot for him to come in. But he's an exciting player. He's absolutely fantastic. Can play as a 6 or an 8. Very dynamic. Lovely fella as well. His interview was really good. He said he plays piano, he can sing. Yeah, really good player. But again, you've got to give young players time to sort of gel. You can't just throw them in. But yeah, I'd probably say right until we maybe buy a striker, because they're strikers and everybody loves a striker, Onana is probably the one I'm most excited about. I just think he's got a lot of potential and he's so dynamic. He just looks like, and he has a great attitude for a 20-year-old, 21-year-old. His interview, he was so down to earth, really nice lad, or came across as a really lovely lad. So he's probably the most excited that we signed, and I hope all the best for him. But yeah, last season though, like I said, Frank Lampard saved us, which was great. Don't get me wrong, I'm not going to say I'm not happy, but I think he struggled. It's something he's not had to deal with before. Now it's just, the question is, where do we finish now? Do we finish with him saving us again, or is he what we need to get to the next level? I don't know. Like I said, he's still a novice. I still think he's very young in it. He's trying to put his identity on us with a 3/5 back. I personally, and a lot of Everton fans, don't like it. Don't think it works. Don't think we've got a squad for it. He's insisting on it, though. It's a little bit tough, though. I will say this for Frank Lampard. I don't think he's got all the pieces to his puzzle yet. And he's now at the point now he's like, well, I've got 8 of the 10 pieces, 7 of the 10 pieces. So I'll play it anyway. And unfortunately, we don't have a good enough squad. And the players aren't good enough to fill in for a lack of a striker. We're not Manchester City, where the wingers can play as a false nine and everybody's got a goal in them. And we're not Liverpool, where the wingers have got goals more than the striker, so you can afford to do that. We need somebody to get our goals, and they're not the wingers. They're not that type of player. Damari Gray is probably our most goal-scoring winger, who can chip in. I do like Damari Gray. He's got a great bit of pace about him. But he's probably the only one, because we've lost Richarlison, which is a big loss. And then not just that, but we could lose Anthony Gordon as well, as I think Chelsea are offering 60 odd million for him. I'm more gutted about the Richarlison one. In hindsight, I wish we could have just sold Gordon instead and kept Richarlison, because he provides at least like 10 goals a season for us. Gordon has only produced 4. Does make me worry about depth to our squad, the front three. If they get injured, we're going to have to stick a youth kid in, a youth candidate, because we don't have the depth. It's McNeil, Gray and Gordon. Take Gordon out, maybe when Townsend's back, he goes back in there. That's how bleak it is. I'm on about sticking Andreas Townsend, who's coming back from a cruciate ligament and is about, I think he might be in his 30s now, 33, sticking him in there as a regular as well, because that's how lack of depth it is. So I'm a bit worried that an injury up there would absolutely ruin us, a bit like Dominic Calvert-Lewin's is right now. I'm just hoping last week, there's still plenty to be done at Everton. I'm hoping the club know that and that club can get it done. Don't like leaving it to the last week. I don't like leaving it to the last day. I think you end up getting ripped off, because everybody knows what you're looking for and you're that desperate you'll pay the price. It's like a convenience store. They can charge what they like because they know you're going to pay for it. So yeah, it's a bit of a tough one moving there. But that probably means we're going to play with the same squad. Unless Gordon goes, I think he could have an alright season for us again. He's got a lot of plaudits. Just while we're on Gordon, I think we're a bit mad to turn down Chelsea's 60 million. I think that's too high for him. I would look to sell him. But if we don't bring anyone in, him maybe, I think he'll have a good season again. Onana, like I said before, Onana really excites me. I hope Dominic Calvert-Lewin is due to have a really good return. I really, really do like him. And he got in, his last season was so sad to watch, because he had such a great season. Then he'd had that injury season where he just could never get fit and we were rushing him back. Not his fault, we were rushing him back. He chipped in at the end with the goals. He's such an important player to us. I really hope he comes back fully fit and just absolutely kicks off the way he's set off under Carlo Ancelotti and gets loads of goals. He really does excite me. When we're on about people who excite, you also have to do, you know, people that could do a little bit better. I think Michael Keane, who I don't think gets many games now, we've got Tarkowski and Cody, I think he could do a lot better. Personally, I think he's one that needs to perform. Solomon Rondon, he needs to do a lot better as well. He really, I don't know if it's his age, the physicality of him, but he's very, very tough to watch playing football. I know he was signed under Benitez, who had experience with him, but I don't think he's one for us right now. So yeah, unfortunately, I don't think we're going to be pushing for the top four, and I hope we're not in the bottom three. I think the top four will probably be Manchester City. I still think Liverpool, even though they've had a tough start, I think it's a marathon, not a sprint. There's plenty left to go. I think those two. I think Tottenham, and then I think Arsenal will get the fourth spot. Tottenham, because Conte's a world-class manager. They made a lot of good signings this transfer window. I think they need them to gel, and I think they'll be absolutely fine. Arsenal, Gabriel Jesus, Zinchenko, big signings. Some of the signings that Arteta made before have gelled well together. And also, I just think Chelsea are at such six and sevens that it's going to take a while for them. The same as us, there's only a week left for them and they've got a lot to do. They need a striker as well. They're looking at Aubameyang. I don't know if he's the answer, but he might be the short-term fix for it. But yeah, I feel like Chelsea might fall away a little bit. Tuchel might struggle, and that's where Arsenal can jump in and get it, which would be great for Arsenal. And Gabriel Jesus is going to score a plentiful for them, I think, this season. The bottom three, I think it'll be Fulham. And I think it'll be Bournemouth, definitely. I think Bournemouth will be bottom, followed by Fulham. And then that third one, I think it could be a number of teams. I think if we're not careful, we will be around them. I think Southampton run the risk of being there as well if they don't get their act together. They dropped away towards it last season, so I think they're in trouble of getting there. But I also think Nottingham Forest, despite all the improvements, if they're not careful, will also fall down there, depending on how well they gel, because they brought a lot of players, but it does feel a little bit like they did a Fulham when Fulham did it. So buying a lot of players doesn't guarantee you Premier League survival. My thoughts on Brentford this season, which is why I've not mentioned them, is I think they'll do well. I think Brentford will do well and they'll avoid the drop again. I think round about where you finished last season, maybe hopefully a couple of places higher for Brentford, just because I like them. They're a very well-run club. Not just saying that because I'm on a Brentford podcast. I think they're a very well-run club and they've got a nice community spirit around them. Last season, they did really well. I think they started strong. That win over Arsenal was fantastic. The atmosphere was amazing. I was watching it on the telly and you could just hear it. Fell away a little bit. There was a point where we had two games in hand on Brentford, and I thought if we won them, we'd have jumped ahead. And I was sort of hoping, because it was either us or Brentford getting relegated, I was hoping we could jump them. But then I think your injuries had come back and it just went all the way through. It almost looked like as well like a change of style. And you just absolutely powered through, got to safety, did really, really well to end it. I think those two games we lost them and then you'd won the next three. And I was like, well, we're never catching them now. I have to look at the next team just above us or just below us and see who you can put, like who we can sort of hope go down. But yeah, I think Brentford will do well this season as well. Like I said, it's a marathon. I think there'll be patches where you struggle, as will every team, but I don't think you'll be anywhere near the danger. Just because you've got so many good players as well, there's a number of players that worry me. Ivan Toney is absolutely fantastic. I heard we were loosely linked with United, same with United only a week ago. I'd absolutely love him. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think Brentford need to let him go. I don't think it'll happen. I don't think he goes to United either. But what a fantastic footballer he is. He uses his body well. He's physical. He's absolutely fantastic. And then you've made some new signings. Ben Mee's a very, very good centre-back. The likes of him, Damsgaard as well, fantastic centre-back, fantastic left-winger, had a really good Euros. I really liked Ben Mee when he was at Burnley. I think that's such a clever buy. But I think they all improve you. I think Aaron Hickey is an improvement. I think Ben Mee's experience is absolutely brilliant. I think other than last season, his injury record's all right as well. Keane Lewis Potter, we were rumoured to be after and never got him, and then he went to you guys. That's a great acquisition, a really young English talent, which is great to see. So yeah, lots of good players that I think will help. It also adds a bit of depth to Brentford. I don't think you've, other than Eriksen, I might be wrong, but I don't think you've got rid of any big players. So it's pretty much similar squad, and you're just adding depth to it, which is just answering the problems you had last season with injury, and you're now filling the gaps. Strakosha, obviously Rayo is out last season and you struggled to replace him. Strakosha is a good backup keeper now. So you've just added depth because you obviously realise injuries were your problem. I think I do this thing where if I think we're going to lose a game, I go for a draw at the least. I think it might be 1-1 against Brentford, but I do have this sneaky feeling that Brentford are going to beat us. I just can't see where our goals come from at the minute. Obviously, from an Everton point of view, I hope I'm wrong, but I really just can't see where our goals come from. So it's going to be really, really tough. I think the game will be a tough game. I think we'll invite a lot of pressure from you, and I think you'll pressure us for a lot of the game. You'll outdo us in the stats as well, I fear. But yeah, it's going to be a really tough one. But that's all I've got to say on the game. Obviously, hope the fans going down to Brentford have a great time, the Everton fans, and hope that obviously Brentford fans have a great time. Billy was telling me there's no segregated pubs, which is absolutely fantastic. So I just hope everybody has a great time and enjoys it.
So there we go, Connor, Toffee Blues podcast. He, good bloke he is. I love him to come down at the weekend. I know tickets are really hard to come by, but yeah, you know, just to share a beer and chat with him, because he's really level-headed. He actually really likes Brentford, just by the way that we run, and he's a proper football person. And as you know, we've got quite a good relationship with people from Liverpool. We like Liverpool as a place because they're all good and they're cool. And like I said to you, after Saturday, I hope that Everton do all right, to be honest with you, just because of Connor, because he's all good. But Connor was a bit nervous about this season, and a bit nervous about the Lampard as well, wasn't he, the Cog?
Yeah, and I think rightly so. I mean, they've got a lot of work to do to even establish themselves as a mid-table side. You know, I think he's absolutely right when he says that they're probably not going to be top four. That made me laugh a little bit, actually. And that actually, you know, Ivan Toney may not go there after all. So I think they're it's clear where they are as a club. Personally, I don't think that Lampard deserved that job. I think he got it on the strength of his playing career rather than anything else. I think he did quite well at the very end of last season, because I really thought they were going to go down, and they did manage to turn it around. So there is some fighting spirit there. But as I said before, I think this is a game where we start as favourites, and we should look to really go at them really hard, because I think we're a better side than them.
Just looking at these strengths and weaknesses of Everton, okay, they're good at creating long shot opportunities and using through balls and creating scoring chances. They're also good at protecting the lead, so we don't want to go behind, and also they're good at stealing the ball from opposition. But where they're weak is keeping possession of the ball, finishing scoring chances, avoiding fouling in dangerous areas, and they're very weak at defending counter-attacks and also aerial duels. So, you know, for us, I mean, you know, in the air, I mean, we've got question marks about ourselves there as well. But also on the counter-attack, that's one area that we are absolutely, you know, we're on fire. You know, if we decide that we're going to click, this is an area where we can actually totally and utterly kind of, you know, dominate the Everton on Saturday. But it's a big question mark, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big question. I mean, like, you know, looking at their team and the players, again, you know, they have got quality there. They have got bags of experience there, but they seem to be kind of jaded. they don't really have a footballing philosophy and style of play as such. You know, Lampard, as the Cog said, I'm not sure why he was head and shoulders above other managers or head coaches in the market. It seems all about reputation and looking back as a player, and maybe like the kind of players that might want to come and play for him, based on his contacts at Chelsea, perhaps. I don't know, but it seems short-termism. I think he could be out of a job if the winless run or the kind of it gets dragged into another relegation dogfight. You know, Anthony Gordon, there's chances, there's talk about him going to Chelsea for 60 million quid, which begs the question. God only knows what some of our players are worth. I know Anthony Gordon is a great player, but he hasn't, and he's young as well. I know he's 19 or 20, so he is a bit younger than someone like Brian Mbeumo. But Brian Mbeumo and Ivan Toney are scoring goals and creating assists are at a far higher level than he is. So 60 million, you've got to be thinking somewhere similar, and in Ivan's case, more. So I again, we don't want to talk. I mean, not that anyone's going to make a decision on buying those two players based on this podcast, but it's just let's not talk up them going, because I think they're here for at least another transfer window, if not another two or three. So take Anthony Gordon out of that scenario for Saturday. Give us an upbeat kind of up and at 'em mentality that we didn't start the game at Fulham with, but we did in the game against Man United. If we go at them, get a big atmosphere going at the ground, Everton are there, they're wobbly already. So I think the signs are good, mate. The signs are good.
That's right. I mean, talking about up and at them, talking about goals, I mean, they've scored one goal so far this season with Damari Gray scoring that goal. Obviously, somebody's got to give them an assist. Just quickly, just between the two of you, just pick anyone out of the hat. Which Everton player do you think has got the one assist for Everton this season for that Damari Gray goal? Laney?
Oh, not Tarkowski.
Put the Cog, what do you reckon?
I'd go him as well, actually. I've got a nasty feeling it was.
No, Jordan Pickford.
Pickford. Oh, yeah, straight in the middle. Yeah.
That's right. So, it might give an idea of what kind of football we might be expecting from Everton, especially if they know what our Achilles heel is going to be. So we need to watch out for that, don't we? Might have to shove Tony back in defence again, Laney, shall we? Days.
They've got Connor Cody back on loan from Wolves. They've got some good players, but Jordan Pickford, he's always got a wobble in him as well, hasn't he?
Yeah. Cody is a strange decision. I mean, he looked to me like a really good player at Wolves, and I'm sure he'll be good at Everton as well, but it's an odd move for him to make, I think. He's only there on loan as well, isn't he?
I think he is as well. And I mean, talking about Connor Cody, but also going back to James Tarkowski, who obviously played for Brentford, and he's not the post popular player at all because of and if Everton fans are listening, is that he went on strike when he was in the Championship, and he got an offer to go to Burnley, and then he decided that he wasn't going to play for us until he got a move to Burnley, which obviously didn't go down too well. So he's called the Judas, as people call him, or some other people call him the Jughead Judas
Judas is better.
Yeah. So Tarkowski. So it's interesting because he moved to Burnley, but then there was the rumours that he was going to move to Man United, he was going to move to all these different places for about 50 million, but in the end, I think Everton got him on a free transfer, which was a bit gutting for us, which means that we didn't get any extra money because we were desperately hoping that he was going to move elsewhere, weren't we?
Yeah, we were. It's gutting if you miss out on the sell-ons. I know we did get a chunk more when he made his England debut, and there was like appearance bonuses as well. So we probably have got a fair few payouts. The other one that we could miss out on is if Neil Maupay gets transferred out of Brighton. So, there's talk of him going to Fulham, and there's talk about Forrest being in for their 1,000th player of the summer. I don't think the numbers that I'm hearing about Maupay mean there's a profit on him. So we probably don't get any extra percentages on that.
Lanane, just quickly, just flipping back to the Fulham game, Neil Maupay moving to Fulham, I'm going to ask you, because you said, look, it didn't seem that bad because we're in the same league and all this. If Maupay had scored that last minute goal for Fulham, would you be more gutted?
Yeah, of course. But I mean, so I'll be gutted even more if Jamie Cureton has scored the goal as well. But, you know, I'm not that bothered about Maupay going to Fulham. I think he'll just sit on the bench. I think it's a shit move if he goes there, to be honest with him. I think he's better off going somewhere else when he can play.
So, the Cog, Saturday, Everton, what do we need to do? I mean, to get back to that Man United vibe, are we going to pretty much keep it as it is? Obviously, Damsgaard came off against Colchester. He had a relatively quiet game, but then he still needs to get back to fitness. He still needs to understand our league. He still needs to understand the players he's playing around with. What's your thoughts on the team on Saturday?
I think he'll probably start on the bench. You know, he looked good. You know, you could see his quality the other night. But he doesn't look ready yet. And I think he will need to bulk up a little bit, actually. He's quite frail looking with like really, really thin legs, which I don't know why, but that really kind of stood out for me. But he's obviously going to become a first choice player, but probably in a few weeks' time, I'd have thought. So I'd stick with, you know, the Man United and Fulham side. You know, if Roslev's fit, if not, then I think the worry remains our kind of the heart of our defence, where we're really missing Pinnock massively, aren't we? Both in the air, but also with that little bit of extra pace and calmness as well. So I'd probably stick with a team close to what's been put out so far. There might be a case for Lewis Potter to come in instead of Visa, maybe give Visa a go from the bench. I think Jensen, who I'm on the whole not the biggest fan of, but he was sensational against United, so I think he's warranted another start. And you've similar team, I think, probably with Baptiste coming on for Josh at some point.
Okay, so listen, I'm going to go around the table here quickly and ask you for a score prediction, Laney.
I'm going to go for a 3-1 Brentford win.
3-1 Brentford and the Cog.
I think if Gordon's not playing or if he's distracted, then 3-1. I think if he is, I'd be a bit more cautious, 2-1. They have got some dangerous players. He's one of them. Damari Gray's another one. So we can't be complacent, but this should be 3 points if we play at our best.
Okay, and I'm going to go 2-0 to the mighty Bees. I'm still going for that 2-0. It's going to come in at some time for me. So this is all good. So listen, this is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. Like I said to you, Everton fans, you go and check out the Ian Westbrook preview, which is out on Friday. It's got all the pubs to go to. There's loads of pubs, millions of pubs, like 40, 50 pubs, 60 pubs, 100 pubs in the area. You could check them out as well. Don't forget, Brentford fans, check out besotted.com/global. It's our little social media, little community, which is out there and just doing its thing. And you can go there and just try it out. And if you like it, you can hang around. And if you don't like it, it's no problem at all. We're still going to be doing the things that we do. Also, don't forget, besotted.com/beer. If you like what you do, buy us a beer as well. And we really appreciate all the people that bought us beers. We are going to shout you out in the next few weeks as well. Subscribe on all good podcast channels and write us a review. But Saturday, I'm looking forward to go down to the Boozer. My mate DLT's coming down, the old Charlton man, you know, who said that we'd never get to the Premier League, and he's going to come down to the Globe and eat his words down there. I'm going to watch him eating his words on the plate as Charlton are languishing in Division One, which is all good. But other than that, like I said to you, I've got the lady in the house.
Good evening to you.
And I've got the Cog in the place.
Good evening to you.
And good evening to myself as well. I want to say Billy Grant. I said, I've got the Cog, we've got the Laney, we've got the Everton who's coming down. As we say,
come on, you bees.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club, because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.